We finally reached the second parak of Mishnah Zayin, 7-2. This is really the centerpiece of the Masechta, if you will. And this Mishnah lays out the 39 categories of Malacha, the Avos Malacha, that are prohibited midoraisa on Shabbos. So just a few moments of introduction before we go through each of the 39 Malachos. The number 39 really comes to us from a Masorah, from tradition. Although the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Mem Tes says that there's an allusion to it in the Psukim, because if you count all the instances of the word malacha and malachto and maleches in the Torah, you'll get to 39. Be that as it may, the 39 categories of malacha really can be organized into four subcategories, and this is certainly useful for mnemonic purposes to remember the different malachas. So each one sort of tells a story. The first category is the 11 malachas that are used to make bread. Then the next category are the 13 malachas used to make textiles. Then there are 7 malachas that have to do with making animal hides. And finally, you'll have 8 malachas that are sort of various things to do with construction in the Mishkan. So the essential point here is that those 39 malachas, 11 to make bread, 13 for textiles, 7 for animal hides, and 8 for miscellaneous construction things, totaling 39, were the 39 activities that were used to construct the Mishkan, and according to some Mefarshim, also were used in the functioning of the Mishkan. That is to say, these 39 are general categories. They're called Avos, which means literally fathers, which implies they have Tolados, which means offspring. That is to say, the Mishnah will enumerate the specific Malacha that was used for the construction or perhaps the functioning of the Mishkan, but that doesn't mean that other things that aren't similar to those malachas are not also malachas midoraisa. They are, and they're just called toldos. As we saw in the previous Mishnah, the only difference between an av and a tolda is simply both are chayav midoraisa. It's just that if you do an av and a tolda, you'll be liable for one chatas if it's from the same av malacha. Okay, so one more piece of introduction here, which is the way that the words that the Mishnah uses is like a noun, meaning the first malacha listed is hazoreya. So hazoreya actually translates literally as the one who plants or sows. Now, the way the Rambam lists it, kind of more intuitively, is not as a noun, but as a gerund, meaning like an ing ending word. So instead of saying the one who plants, which is hazoreya, he lists it as zuriya. Zuriya means planting. They're both used throughout the literature, so it's important to be familiar with both kinds of terms. I'll actually try to go through both of them each time. The reason why the Mishnah here says it in terms of people, hazareya, the one who plants, etc., is because the previous Mishnah was talking about culpability. So since we're saying one who does something, b'mezid is chayav karas, and b'shogeg is chayav achatas, we have to, who are these people? The one who plants, the one who plows, etc. Okay, so now, let's go through all the malachas. Now, with each of the malachas, it's important to understand two things. The first is the specific meaning of the word and the actual av malacha, what was done in the Mishkan, in its setting up or construction, or functioning. And then also to understand the conceptual nature of that av, because that is how we'll determine what are the toldos as well. So, for example, for zuria, for planting, the av malacha actually is indeed taking a seed and putting it in the ground. But the toldos would be anything that does the same kind of thing as the av. So what does that mean? So conceptually, zriya is facilitating plant growth. So that means if you would plant a tree, which isn't the same as planting a seed, or you would prune a tree to help it grow better, or you'd fertilize the ground to help the plant grow better, etc. You water the plants. All these things are facilitating the plant growth, and those will all be toldos of the av malacha. Each also asar medoraisa, if they are doing the same thing. Now, one other thing to keep in mind is that all the avos malachos, to be liable for them, one has to fulfill the other requirements of maleches machsheves, calculated labor, as was set forth sort of in the introduction to the Masechta. But that's important. One important thing to keep in mind specifically with these lists here in this Mishnah is that if it's something is not constructive but destructive, right, mekalkel, so then it's not considered to be a malacha, a midoraisa. So even when we have things that are sort of like you might think destructive in nature, like erasing script or demolishing Soser, a building, etc. So it has to be that these malachas are done, that you were erasing so you could write again, you're demolishing so you could rebuild again, you were tearing so you could re-sew again, and so on. Okay, that's important. So let's go through each one on their own. Here we go inside. Avos malachos arba'im chasar achas. In total, there are 39 categories of malacha, avos malacha. The reason why the Mishnah here uses a strange expression of 40 minus 1 as opposed to 39 is really, in truth, it's to parallel the same expression that was used in Maseches Makos, where we talk about getting Makos, the lashes that are administered by the Bezdin, and we say they get 39, and the Mishnah says 40 minus 1. The reason why it does that over there is to echo the Pasuk, which talks about getting 40 lashes, but our tradition is that 40 would actually be a lethal dosage administration of lashes, so we do one fewer, and it parallels the language over there. I heard a great shot, I have to tell you, from a Lubavitch guy. He said that really this is important, that the Mishkan is like a microcosm of the universe, and the same way Hashem rested on the seventh day, we desist from constructive activities known as the malachos on Shabbos, and we are like Hashem in that way. And really, we have 39 creative acts, which are listed in this Mishnah. Hashem, in truth, said this fellow to me, had 40, because in addition to what we're listing here, Hashem also did Yesh Ma'ayin. He created something from nothing, which is something that we, in theory, would not be allowed to do, but in practice, it's not really relevant since we couldn't anyways. And therefore, we talk about the 40 minus 1 that we can do, as opposed to the 40 that Hashem didn't do. I like that. Okay, so inside we say, Avos Malachos Arbaim Chatzar Achas, there are a total of 39 categories of Malacha, and they are, number one, this is again the list, the next 11 will be for making bread. So let me tell you the story so you can keep it in your head here. The story for making bread, if you will, is first you plant the seeds, Zorea, then you till the soil, Choresh, then you reap the wheat that's grown, that's Kotzer, then you gather the stalks together, that's Ma'amer, then you thresh them on the floor, that's dash. Then you winnow what you've threshed, that's zore. Then you clean out, pick out the grains from the dirt, so that will be borer. Then you, I should have said, you pick out the dirt from the grains, to be honest. That's borer. Then tochen, you grind it up to make flour. Meraked, you sift that flour. Lush, you then knead. You make a dough, mixing the flour with water, kneading it together, and then finally, ha'ofe is baking it into bread. Those 11 steps, that's the story. Let me go through each of those malachas now, one at a time. The first is zorea, which we said already is planting, lav malacha, putting the seed in the ground, but the toldos would be anything that facilitates plant growth. Ha'choresh, or harisha, is plowing. That means, that literally means you're readying the... You're making the ground more arable, more able to produce and hold vegetation, you know, produce. So choresh really happens twice. First, you plow the earth so it's soft, and you can put the seeds in the ground, and that happens really before the zriya, the planting of the seeds. But then afterwards, you might then till the soil again so that the ground is soft and that the dirt covers up the seeds you planted so that the birds, etc., don't get to them. So it'll be tilling. Both of those steps are considered choresh, and therefore the Mishnah chooses to say choresh second instead of first, because even though there is a preliminary plowing, that subsequent tilling is also part of the malacha. Again, the concept here is making the ground more arable, so fertilizing the ground, etc., would also be the atolda of choresh. Then the third is v'hakotzer. Katsira is reaping, that is cutting something that's attached to the ground and detaching it to harvest it. It would apply to anything. You pull an apple off a tree, etc., picking grapes, all those kinds of things are also sort of told us of kotzer, but kotzer, the actual technical word, means to reap grain growing from the ground. V'hama amer, the fourth is gathering together the stuff that was now detached, so that would be like, you know, ma'amer would be binding sheaves of wheat, but it applies to anything that grew from the ground that's in its place where it grew, that's been detached, and you're gathering it. So if, I don't know what, you took a stick and you whacked the olive tree and knocked all the olives to the ground, that would be the whacking the tree to knock the olives off, that would be kotzer. But when you gather the olives together, that would be a toldah of ma'amer. You're gathering them together. Number five is v'hadash. excuse me, there's no vav there. I should say the hadash, the one who threshes. So threshing is when you take the wheat that you harvested and you put in a kind of like a think of a big circle on the floor, okay? And that means what you have is you have these little wheat kernels. Think of kind of like what the barley you put in your chilens or something like that. And it's inside like a covering. It's inside like the pod, like think of like a pea pod, if you will. That's part of the ear of the grain. So you have to now loosen the edible part, the ochel, the kernel itself, from its moorings, from the thing it's attached to, the part of the plant it's encased within. So that is the concept of dash. Dash is to release a food from its attachment to its like container. Like it's, yeah. So a told of dash could even be like, you know, when you're squeezing an orange. So you're detaching the liquid from trapped with inside its, you know, cellulose little pod. The Rambam understands that even if you give blood, so you take bloodletting, so dash, you're removing the blood from its container, the, you know, the vein inside, etc. That's the concept. But the actual thing here, dash, is threshing. So what happens is you put all those grains, here's a grain on the floor there. You'll take like a very heavy board that has sharp things beneath it. Think of it as nails, or it's probably embedded little rocks and stuff. And then someone sits on that board usually, and then it's pulled in a big circle by oxen. And by doing that, essentially, the friction between the board and the little rocks embedded in the underside of the board, pushing and like kind of grinding against the ears of grain, grinds it up. Not to break the grain into pieces, but to loosen, to break the bond, to loosen the connection between the kernel and its container. So that is what dash is. Then number six is vahazora. Zora is winnowing. That is to say, think of, you know, what happens is after you've done your threshing, so you have a big mix on the floor that is both wheat, the edible wheat, and the chaff. That's the bits of plant that you don't want to eat because it's not edible. Animals can eat it, but you won't eat it. So how do you separate the two? So you do zora. Zora winnowing, you take a pitchfork, let's say, and on a windy day, you'll throw that mix up in the air. So what happens is the heavy kernels kind of fall plunk straight back down to the ground, whereas the wind will carry off the lighter bits of grass, the chaff that you separated when you did the threshing. So zora is separating the ochel, the edible part, from the psolis, the non-edible part, but it's done using the wind. Okay, then haborer. Now borer is sorting. The actual case is you're taking out the rocks from the, in this case, you're taking out the rocks that are left on the ground that are mixed up with the little kernels, edible kernels of wheat. Okay, remember you're on the floor out in the field somewhere. So it's very nice that you have all this now edible grain after you've winnowed, but it's on the dirt. So you have to get the dirt out of it. So before you harvest it up, you'll pull out the little rocks, etc. So borer or brera, sorting, is separating out the bad from the good, conceptually. For ease of purpose, you can just think of it as being done with your hand. If you do it by hand, it's borer, as opposed to the zora, which is using the wind. Okay, borer is using your hand. Well, the truth is it could be done with the kli also, according to many mafarshim, but anyways, let's stick to just your hand. So again, the literal thing is you're picking the rocks out of the mixture of kernels on the ground, but borer is any kind of sorting when you're separating something bad from good. It could apply to anything, and it's probably one of the most wide-ranging and, you know, I'll call it problematic malachas that comes up a lot. It could apply to silverware, it could apply to books, and so on and so forth. Anything, if you're taking out the bad and leaving the good, you're in borer territory. Then the eighth is hatochen. Tchina is grinding, so milling. What happens is you take now those kernels of wheat, you put them into a mill, let's say a hole in the ground they did it, or whatever, a mortar and pestle, and they'll take something heavy and you'll grind it up. And you grind that the kernel into flour, into powder. That's called tchina, tochen. Now, the making of flour is the actual of malacha, but the concept is anytime you're taking something like a big edible thing and you're transforming it through cutting it to smaller pieces or breaking it down to smaller pieces, where the smaller pieces function in a way that's different than the whole unbroken piece. So in other words, you just can't make bread out of whole kernels of wheat. You'll have to grind it. So by grinding it, it's in smaller pieces, but it functions differently. So the same is true if you take any large piece of food and cut into small pieces, if now it's functioning in a different way. So you'd be over the doraisa of tochen. So that means maybe if you're taking an avocado and cutting into little small pieces, or even a carrot or something, at some point cutting that food into small pieces, very small pieces, already is tochen, even though you're not grinding it. Okay. The ninth is hamaraked. Maraked is sifting. That means you take the flour and you put it with this, like on a sifter, and you separate out to get, now you want to get the bran and whatever else is mixed in with the ground up flour to be separated from the flour below. So maraked is also kind of sorting as bor and zored. The difference is, the simplest way to think of it is that maraked is using a kli or a sifter as opposed to bor, which is using your hand. Although it's not all the mafarshim explain like that, but let's just keep it simple like that. So maraked is using like a sifter or a strainer. So anytime you're using, you're using a utensil to separate out, like a filter or a colander, all that kind of stuff, you're in maraked territory. Midoraisa is toldos. Tenth is vahalash. Alisha is kneading, literally. The point is that you're mixing together water with the flour to make some kind of like a paste. So whenever a dough. So anytime you're doing that, you're mixing together solids and liquids to make some kind of paste, whatever it is, you're in lush territory. That's the concept there. And finally, number 11 is v'ha ofa. Ofa is baking. That means you take now this dough and you put it in the oven, and the oven bakes it. The concept, however, of ofa is transforming something through fire. So ofa kind of has like a ko of almost, which is bishel. Bishel is cooking. The difference being, you bishel is through with water, like you put pasta in the pot and you boil up the pot or make a challenge, whatever it is, as opposed to ofa, which is dry heat. But the concept is the same. And anytime you're using fire to transform something, you're doing the Elisa Tolda of this. So that would say if you're melting wax, or if you're annealing steel, and so on. You make something red hot, a filament, all those kind of things. You're transforming it through heat. So that is all at least a tolda of ofa. Those are the first 11 for making bread. Now we have 13 for making textiles. Okay, so it starts out, we're going to make a woolen curtain here, let's say. So you have to start with the animal. The first is hagozes a satsemer. You have to shear the sheep. That means you take like a scissors, let's call it, and you cut off the wool from the sheep, getting lots of little short little hairs, like fibers. Okay, so the concept of gozes is anytime you're separating material for use from the body of a living creature. Okay, so it could be shearing. Gozes might apply even to cutting a human hair or cutting human fingernails, etc. It's a question if that would be a derais to rabbanon, because it's hard to see how it's a malchus shetzrich legufa, but in any case, putting that aside, the point is if you're taking something off a living creature for use, then that is called gozes. Then that's the first of the 11, or I'll keep the number. That's number, there are 11, sorry, the 13, excuse me, the 13 total, but let me keep running to getting to 39. So that's the first of the 13, but it's now number 12 on the list out of the 39. The next is number 13 on the list, or the second for making textiles, is malabno. Malabin literally means to whiten. Now there are two different kinds of approaches in the Rosh Hashanah of what's going on here. Either it means you're somehow scouring or scrubbing or rinsing, washing out this hair. Because remember, this is coming from a sheep. The sheep lives in the dirt. It's covered in filth and oil and grease and animal dung, etc. You got to clean those fibers so they'll work well. So how do you do that? So either you basically put it in like a running river, like water running over it, and or in like a tub with some kind of detergent, but you're gonna scrub it clean, you're gonna scour it, and also get a lot of the grease off of the hairs. And you'll alternatively, the Rambam understands what happens is you're putting this animal hair into a like an oven while it's still a little moist, and you're firing up the oven with sulfur. What happens is there's a chemical reaction where essentially sulfuric acid is produced as you're doing it. So the point is that you're bleaching this wool by having it heated inside this oven. So the point is, again, that you're cleansing the the fibers that you've shorn from, sheared from the sheep. Vamanatspo. Menapets is to essentially unmat, separate out those fibers. You need to make them essentially separated apart, so whatever debris is trapped inside of them still will now come out. Think of think of dreadlocks. So you've shored this animal which has sort of dreadlocks. It's still got, you have to loosen it up and separate out the hairs so whatever's inside can come out. And also, you want to maximize the surface area of these fibers, these hairs, because you're going to want to dye it in a minute. So you want maximum surface area so the dye can take hold. So between, once you've both malabined, you've scoured it and used a detergent sort of get the grease off so it's ready to absorb the dye, as well as now done niputs, you've separated it. The separating can be done, different mafarshim folks on different aspects, whether it's what's called willying, which is sort of whacking it with a stick, or picking, using your hands to separate it out, or it could be carding and combing. You're using if you've seen these brushes they use to comb a dog, it's kind of like a big card with long, sharp teeth. So you use that, or two of them in opposite directions to pull it apart. So those are all, that's part of menapets. Now, an essential part of menapets also, which is in doing that, in carding it, meaning you take, it's hard to explain without a picture. You take two brushes, let's just think of two brushes, and you comb them running, in opposite directions from each other with all the massive hair and fibers in the middle. The idea is that it's going to allow the fibers to run parallel one to the other, which is important later on, because if they're nice and parallel, you can get a nice long lashon, like a long amount of them, which will be useful now for making and in the, all line up in the same direction, parallel one to the other, so when you in a moment transform that into thread, the thread won't have like bumps in it. It'll be smooth. Okay? So menapets are taking these fibers and combing them or cleaning them and separating them apart. So they'll take a dye and they'll be lined up in the same way. And once that's happened, you get to the next malach, which is v'hatsovo. Soveya is a dyeing, D-Y-E, dyeing. So that means essentially you'll take this, all this fiber, this hairs, you'll put it into a cauldron with the dye and it will take the dye so you can color it how you want it colored. Now, after that, you'll take it out of the, and so soveya is coloring the surface of anything. If you paint a wall or something, you also in soveya. Soveya does not apply to foods, importantly. Fine. But it could apply to, if you want to have your toilet bowls look blue so that they're shiny and you put the little blue thing inside so it looks nice and neat and clean and people think, oh, what a beautiful toilet you have. So coloring the water of the toilet blue would also be told of soveya. Okay, not food though. Next, vatove. Tevia is the converting of those short little hairs, which are only a few inches long from the back of the sheep, into a nice long thread, which you'll need, of course, to make the garments. So tevia means, tove means spinning. What that means essentially is you take that mass of those, all the short hairs, and you'll feed them into what's like essentially a spindle. It's hard, again, hard to describe it exactly out of picture, but kind of think of like a spinning top or something, and it's spinning, and it's got a hook on the end of it, and you sort of, as you feed the fibers into it, they get intertwined together, and they can now become one long thread, as opposed to a bunch of short hairs. Okay, so that's tove. Then the 17th is v'hamesech. Now mesech is essentially setting up a loom. Specifically, the loom, okay, let me explain this. Once you've got your threads, you're now going to weave them. Now, weaving them essentially means you take a whole mass of threads that are going on one direction. That's called the warp or the chassis threads. Think of, 100 threads going just from whatever, east to west, okay? And then what you're going to do is you're going to then take other threads, those and interweave them, going over, under, over, under, those 100 east to west threads, and you put these other direction, meaning that these are called the arev threads, the transverse threads, which are called the weft threads. So they'll go over under. So what happens is, like if you look at your own shirt or something, you'll see the fabric is essentially almost like a checkerboard with, all the east west, that was the, in our case, that was the warp, and then north south threads, that's the weft, okay, that's the chassis and arev. So you to do that by hand, going over, under, over, under, over, under, 100 times for each additional row of order of thread of weft thread you're doing would take you a lifetime. So if it's done by hand, so what happens is they used a loom. A loom essentially mechanizes, it automates the process where you can very quickly go over, under. How do they do that? They take the warp threads, the ones that are in my description, going from east to west, all 100 of them, and they will put them on a loom. That means to say you'll essentially stretch them on like two rollers, okay, the east to west threads, that you can essentially roll them and it keeps on going and going and going, so you can keep on pulling it, you know, across to make more and more and more fabric. Setting it up on those two rollers that pulls it tight, that sets up, you know, this east to west, my description, these warp threads, the chassis threads, that is Mesach. Mesach is setting up the loom, specifically attaching those warp threads to the rollers. But then, now you need to essentially have the weft threads, the RF threads that will go in the other direction, perpendicular, over, under, over, under. So how do you do that? What you do is you take those warp threads and you'll attach half of them, let's call them the odds first, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, etc., up to 99. You'll put those into, you'll take these two, hard to describe what they look like, even. They're these two, I'll call it a grid, for lack of a better term, a grid. It looks kind of like, if you think of like the bars of a child's crib or something like that, but in the middle of each bar, there's like a hole, okay? So, and through the hole, the thread can go, okay? So think of that kind of what I'm calling a grid, like the side of a child's crib, okay, which has, let's say, 50 bars and 50 holes, and this will be the odd one. So that thing's called a heddle, H-E-D-D-L-E in English. Okay, the heddle, you will have one of them, which will be for the odds, and the second one, which will be for the evens, okay? And they're going to be, you know, they're going to, that way, you'll put all the warp threads through those heddles, and you'll put all the odds to the odd one, and all the evens to the even heddle. And that way, if you make the heddles go, the heddles are going also perpendicular, they're going north-south, okay? Our warp is going east-west, they're going perpendicular north-south. So what happens is, and they're all the warp threads are going through it now. So if you can imagine, if you take one, the odd heddle and lift it up, and the even heddle and push it down, what'll happen is, first of all, you'll have like the half the threads going up and half the threads going down. And then you can take, this is called the shuttle in English, the buch here, you can throw, if you pass thread between the ups and downs, what'll happen is, if you imagine that, so you take one thread, that will be our RF thread, our weft thread, and you pass it between the gap that you made by taking half up and half down. So what happens is, now when you alternate and you take the odds and now move that odd heddle down and the even heddle up, magically you've trapped the thread that you went across over, under, over, under. And then if you now pass that thread back towards you, let's say going back south again, and then you switch the heddles after you pass it through, so now the odd one goes back up and the even goes back down, again, you'll trap them going over, under. So that is how a loom works, super simply speaking. If you can do that back and forth, and start rolling back and forth with the weft thread, and you start rolling the warp threads, what happens is you can now make a nice long bolt of fabric. So Mesach is the malacha of setting up the loom by putting the warp threads on the rollers, okay? And the next malacha, which is called Ose Shnei Batinirin, means the threading of those warp threads through the holes. The base near is the loop, the hole through which the warp threads go. So if you, so essentially setting up the loom. So putting two of those warp threads through those holes in the heddles, that's the malach of Ose Shnei Batinirin. Putting two of them in is the malach of the rice already. And then the Ha'oreg Shnei Chutin, that's next malacha, number 19, is passing that weft thread to and fro. So you kind of went over, under in one direction, then you went under, over in the other direction. That's called Oreg, weaving. Taking that, what you're doing is you're taking thread and you're moving them in perpendicular one to the other to begin to create a piece of fabric. Okay? Then number 20 is Vahapotseya Shnechutin. If you, then you're tearing off two threads. Again, the point here is that you're moving those two threads from the fabric because you want to like switch it with something else. You know, you move different colors. Maybe it's just that you need to fix something, or you're going to end it here, whatever the story is. So potseya as part of removing it from the loom, any of the above, those are all constructive reasons for tearing off the two threads, at least two threads. Once you bar potseya, tear two threads off the fabric, so then already that's the malacha. Ha-kosher. Kosher is tying a knot. So if you tie a knot of the threads, you're now doing the malacha d'oraisa. So kosher literally means like knots, and it means basically taking two kind of pliable materials and tying them together. Kosher requires midoraisa that the knot be a kesher shel kayama, that it was when you knotted it, you intended it to last indefinitely. And according to the Rambam and the Rif, it also midoraisa needs to be what's called a kesher uman, which is like literally means professional knot. Meaning the knot has to be tight and durable, that it can last indefinitely. But if it's not really tight and durable, it's not a kesher uman. It would only be a derabanan knot, even if you intended to tie it indefinitely, according to the Rambam. Okay, so that's tying. Vahamatir is untying. It's the opposite of tying. So the very knot that you are not allowed to tie, if you undo it for the sake of retying it, remember it has to be constructive. That would be matir. Vahatofer shtei tfiros. One who sews two, I'll call them as stitches, for lack of a better term. Meaning you go in and then you go out of the fabric. That's called sewing. Sewing, just to make it clear, is you're let's say you're taking two pieces of fabric and you're attaching them together. So you take a needle and thread and you'll now go in one and out the other to connect them together. Okay, like up and down, whatever it is, to begin to make that stitch. Now, according to the Bartanura here, even one in and one out will be the malach of tofer, but only if then you knot it together. Because if you knot it together, not that string, then it will hold. It's just one stitch, but at least it holds in place. If you didn't knot it, it couldn't hold in place, therefore you wouldn't be able to malacha with oraisa. On the other hand, if you go three times in, out, and then in again, even without knotting it at the end, you've now kind of bound these two pieces of fabric in place through sewing, and that will be also tofer, tefira, the doraisa, but it's a shtei tefiros, just one in and one out. For that, you need to tie the ends. Hakorea almanas litfor shtei tefiros. Or if one tears, like undoes stitching, if he undoes even two stitches, if he does it so that he can re-stitch it together afterwards, that would be the malacha doraisa. Okay, and that ends the 13 for making textile. Okay, now we have 7 malachas for making animal hides. The first is Hatzad Tzvi, one who traps a gazelle. Tzeda, trapping, means you're confining an animal because you want to keep it somewhere, you want it for something. So anytime you trap an animal that you want, like in a bear trap or something because you want the bear or something, so that would be considered to be Tzeda, trapping. Then, but in this case, you're getting this gazelle because you want to make a nice animal hide covering for the Ohel Moed. And that being the case, after you trap it, the next malacha of the 7 will be Vashochto, that's 26th on the list. Shechita is slaughtering it, of course. The concept is Netilas Neshama, taking the life of something. And now since we understand that the life force is in the blood, causing any bleeding at all already is the Doraisa of Shochet. So causing a bruise where the blood is detached from the circulatory system and pulled underneath the skin. Even that, since it won't get reabsorbed back into the circulatory system, already is a Tolda of Shochet. But even, flossing your teeth and making them bleed or whatever it is, you're in shochet territory. Okay. Then the third of the 7, or number 27 on the total list, is v'hamafshito. Hefshet is flaying the animal. That is, you're basically cutting the animal to remove the skin, its hide from the meat, from the animal. So it's hefshet. Then the next is v'hamolcho. Maleach means to salt. So when you want to transform this animal skin, like this pelt, I'll call it, into a hide that lasts indefinitely, because otherwise it's alive, was from a live creature, it will biodegrade. So you have to preserve it. That preserving process is called tanning, and that makes it so that the hide will last indefinitely, or whatever. Yeah, so the first step in the process of transforming an animal's skin into a durable hide is you have to desiccate it, you got to dehydrate it to dry it out. So the way they did that is basically soaking it in salt or salt water solution that draws out all of the liquid from the animal hide. So that's vamolcho, moleach. And the next one is ma'abedes oro. Ma'abed is also tanning. That's using other chemicals and other things to preserve as preservatives for the hide. Now the Gemara will end up saying that Maleach and Ma'abed is really two sides of the same coin, they're together, and indeed we're going to remove Maleach from the list. Okay, so ultimately Maleach will be removed from the list of 39, which will give us space for one more in a bit, which would be the Malach of Mesartet, which is like cutting in lines. Like think of in a Sefer Torah, you have those like indented lines on which the writing is done. So that's Mesartet. But the Mesartet in the time of the Mishkan here was essentially marking where you're gonna cut the hides to fashion them into the right size. Okay, so we're not going to see explicitly Mesartet, but it belongs on the list, replacing Molcho. Then the Mishnah says now, either some gear cells, I think the gear cells in front of us all are Vahamochako, but the gears of the Bar Tzenura and how it's usually presented is Memachko. Memachek is to transform that now, that tanned hide, to sort of smooth it out to you know, it's going to be not smooth, it's going to be have bumps and hair and so on, so to pull it taut and to smooth it out and to press it into the shape you wanted, that's memachek, followed by the missing malacha of Mesartet, marking it off, of it's called scoring the hide, and then v'hamachatcho, machatech is to cut something to the size you want it. Here it's cutting the hide so it fits to the exact, you know, it was shaped like an animal before. You want it to be shaped like, say, into a rectangle, so you cut it as appropriate. But anytime you're cutting something to the size you want it, that's machatech. So, you know, if you're cutting toilet paper to the size you want it off the roll, you're in machatech territory. If you're separating even like the yogurts that are attached together, so you have one, you know, one little container of yogurt, the size you want to function with instead of the whole thing together, it's a pain in the neck when they're all attached, that would be machatech even, okay? So those are the seven for animal hides, and now we're going to have eight that are really used in construction. The first two are hakosiv shtei osios, one who writes two letters, v'hamochek almanas lichtov shtei osios, and its analog is the next one, which is erasing that writing in order you can write two more letters. The reason why that's important is because, of course, it has to be constructive. There'll be a discussion in the Mishnayos if we're talking about letters specifically or any meaningful symbols, like say numbers or Chinese characters, etc. So we'll get to that later on in the Mishnayos. But the point is writing two. In the Mishkan, that was done when they had the boards, the krushim of the Mishkan, they had to be lined up properly. So the way they did that is when they attached the boards the first time, they marked them off, you know, the end of the first board they marked with an aleph, and the beginning of the second board they marked with an aleph, so they compare the alephs together. And then at the end of the second board they marked the base, and then the beginning of the third board they marked the base, so they can pair the bases together, etc. So that writing is what was used in the Mishkan, that is the kosev. Okay. Now, next in the list, nearing the end here, we have habona v'hasoser. Again, that's a pair of two. Bona is construction, as opposed to soser, which is like, you know, demolishing something. Unconstructing it, so the opposite of bone. So bone means really assembling something. Bone has two guises. The first guise is assembling a structure on the ground, okay, like building a tent, a house or something. And that'll apply to anything that's attached to the ground. Even the smallest improvements or development of a ground-based structure will be bone. So just smoothing out holes in the ground or digging a hole in the ground or plugging up a little crack in your wall or something, all bone midoraisa. Okay, but also assembling pieces together of something is also considered bona. There is a machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai if there's binyan bekelim, if you can add construction when it comes to utensils. Although we posit like Beis Hillel that there isn't binyan bekelim, that's like sort of an improvement. But if even Beis Hillel will agree, and the halacha will be, if you're assembling something from scratch, you know, you get a chair out of the box, you know, from IKEA, and you build into a chair, so that would be considered to be bona because you're assembling this chair from nothing. Okay, from just raw pieces. That's bona, and soser would be taking it apart, the building or the chair, etc. Again, it would have to be for a constructive purpose that you're taking down the building to build a bigger one or something for it to be a doraisa. Okay, now we have hamachabe v'hamavir. Again, two more that are a pair. Mechabe is to extinguish a fire, and mavir is to kindle a fire. So the kindling fire is straightforward. If just lighting a lamp, burning a piece of paper or something, that's all the doraisa of mavir, of making a flame. Mechaba is extinguishing that flame. Now, for that to be for a constructive purpose, the way that would be is because when you want to make like a furnace to make something very hot, you need coal. And to make charcoal, in charcoal, I should say. And charcoal is produced by essentially, you know, burning the wood and then extinguishing it. So you have those charcoals. So the extinguishing of the burning wood to make up charcoal is a constructive purpose and necessary for making a furnace for, say, smelting metal, etc. So that's the malacha of mechaba. So mechaba and mavir. So we got two more to go. The 38th is hamaka bepatish, which literally means the smack of the hammer. Okay, so there are different mafarshim of exactly what this is referring to. The idea is it's the final hammer blow, the finishing touch. So some understand what it means is literally the finishing touch on any kli, any utensil, is makab patish, the finishing of its construction. So that means it's just, you know, it was functional, but it wasn't yet, you know, the final panache wasn't there. So the final finishing touch, that's makab patish. Others understand it means like when you're hewing stone from, like quarrying stone from a mountain, so you have to cut the edges, and then finally it's like almost all detached, but it's still got attached to the mountain by a thread. The makba patish, the last smack of the hammer, will then knock it off from the mountain, and that is the finishing touch again, the essential last piece. So understand what we're talking about here is when you're working on the, if you're hammering on an anvil and you need to have a smooth hammer that shouldn't have any nicks in it, so you're whacking against the hammer against the anvil, even that can be makba patish, the hitting against the anvil, to smooth out and repair the potentially dinged hammer, that'd be the makba patish. Whatever it is, makba patish, very common. All the prohibitions against fixing utensils is all makba patish territory. So that you can't do, of course. Medoraisa, makba patish. And finally, the last one, 39, which you've seen already in the Masechta so far, is Hamotzi Mereshus LeRashus, one who transfers from one domain to another domain, referring to here between Reshus HaYachid and Reshus HaRabim, or vice versa. When one transfers, as you saw, from Yachid to private domain, remember with the mechitzas and 10 tvachim, to the public domain, the open area, wide open area, that's 16 tvachim across, with population and so on, traveling through it. So that would be, either way, would be Hotza'a. Hotza'a technically actually is going from private to public, and Hachnasa from public to private. In the Mishkan, what was happening there is they had these agalot, these big wagons that were used to transporting the boards of the Mishkan, etc. So those agalot, those wagons, were 10 tefachim off the ground with the beds of them. So therefore, the bed, of the agala was a reshus yachrot itself. It was more than 4x4 tefachim on a side, and it was 10 tefachim off the ground. So it's a reshus yachid. So putting it from the desert floor, which was the reshus rabim, where all the Jews were, onto the agala was a transfer, as a hachnasa from the rabim to the yachid. And they would do it, and obviously in the reverse also, when they reassemble the Mishkan. So that's from Yachat to Rabim. So that is the Melech Hotza. We've seen already, important told us that include any sort of Ha'avara, transporting even Dal Ramos and Rishos HaRabim. It really is considered to be a tolda of that. And we've seen other things too, like Moshit and Zorek, etc., handing over and throwing things through the Rishos HaRabim or from Yachat to Rabim. All those are toldos of Hotza. And the Mishnah ends by saying, Hare elu avos malachos. These are the categories of malachos, arbam chasrachas, for a total of 40 minus 1, or 39. It reenumerates it here, and actually twice the Mishnah counts the malachos 39, when you could count them yourself, to tell you two things. First of all, I'll tell you that even if you did like every malach under the sun, on a Shabbos, you're only liable to 39 different chataos, because there's 39 and no more. That's the first count. And the second count at the end here is because Rabbi Huda actually has other items on the list, and the Mishnah here is saying, no, it's these 39 and nothing else.